J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
This is a song I wrote when I was 3. Oh, I think the kitten's trying to kill me. I better kill him first. Good thing mommy's sleeping. Where are the big scissors? Here, kitty, here, kitty, here, kitty. We're gonna play a different funny kind of game. Nothing's ever gonna be the same.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023. You are at jcontheline.com. Hi. Hopefully we have a nice, quiet weather and wind day today. God, that situation, that was on the national news last night. It was the, I believe it was story number 2 in the national news last night, just north of Litchfield, between Litchfield and Springfield. You've all seen what happened. And, you know, who's to blame? Nobody. All the farmers did was plow their fields. Nobody knew the wind was going to be kicking up 50 miles an hour and just blinding people. And, you know, if you've ever been in a whiteout situation, and I used to be in a lot of them because I used to live in Chicago, but especially in Wisconsin, but particularly Michigan. Oh, geez, I lived in Michigan total, because let's see, I worked in Lansing, Grand Rapids, and Flint. And this was when I was coming up in the business, and you get the thunder snow and these. I was driving a little rice burner, as DJ used to call it. Japanese made cars, you would call them rice burners. I had like a little 4-cylinder Chevy Mazda or something like that. I'm driving along, and the snow, it was like somebody was taking dumpsters full of snow and just throwing them at the side of my car. Where you're holding on, if you've ever driven a high-profile vehicle, when it's really, really windy and you're holding on to the steering wheel, because you're like, Jesus, I'm being blown all over the road here. So, you know, but these people yesterday didn't stand a chance. By the time they realized there was a problem, the crash has already started. And I was thinking about it yesterday because you're like, well, what if I were in that situation? What would I do? Well, immediately pull off to the side of the road. That's not probably going to help you because everybody else is thinking the same thing, but they can't see anything. So now they go, all right, pull off to the side of the road, honey, we can't see. And you go slamming right into the back of another car that is also pulled off the road. And even if you sort of go down the embankment, and there's a lot of places along I-55, in central Illinois, when you can do that, that probably didn't even work either because the same thing happened. Somebody's like, all right, pull over this way. And you go slamming right in the back of somebody else. But I've heard 6 dead. I've heard 8 dead. I'm not really sure what the number is, but it'd be nice to have some rain around everywhere. I mean, this drought situation is just awful. And you wouldn't have that. You wouldn't have the situation that happened yesterday had we had a normal amount of rainfall. But no, we don't get rainfall. We get snowmelt. And it doesn't look like there's going to be anything more than minor flooding along the Mississippi. At least that is what they're telling us now. And again, if you didn't hear the podcast yesterday, I'm told it was a good podcast, by the way. Dave Murray has said that you get to about mid-May, and it's going to be like somebody grabbed some sort of a giant lever and just pulled it, and we're going to go from like 48 to 88 pretty much overnight. I don't know what's going to happen at the Cardinal game tonight, but you have to assume there's going to be some sort of ceremony or recognition of Mike Shannon, given the fact that this is the first time the Cardinals are playing at home since the death of Mike over the weekend. So that's something. And then when they start playing ball, I got a whole nother situation going on because Shohei Ohtani is in town, and it is likely that he will be a free agent and available to any team that wants to pay for him, maybe by mid-season, if not by mid-season, by the end of the season. And, you know, nice welcome for Mr. Ohtani tonight. You never know. You never know. Players come to St. Louis and they like it. So this would be his first sort of indoctrination, if you will, into the treatment that the fans give good players here in St. Louis. So let's see what happens. I got stuck buying flowers this morning because it is Teacher Appreciation Day across the Fruited Plains today. My daughter has a couple of teachers. She's in seventh grade now, and she has a couple of teachers that she absolutely adores. And so I got stuck for flowers here this morning. Yeah, I start thinking about teachers. I didn't have very many good ones. The Catholic grade school that I went to absolutely did not prepare me for high school. My high school was an all-boys college prep situation, and I was so far behind, it was ridiculous. Thank God I was good in some subjects, because then it pulled up my overall grade point average. Well, let's see what Mo is saying here about tonight.
Cardinals will hold a moment of silence before the game to remember the legendary radio voice Mike Shannon, who passed away over the weekend. Shannon spent 50 years in a Cardinals radio booth. Redbirds also have a pregame ceremony planned to honor the Hall of Fame catcher, Tim McCarver, who passed away in February. So a couple of honors for those great gentlemen.
We're doing both tonight. That's a pretty good idea. Well, anyhow, back to teachers. When I go into high school, it's, you know, because I had all boys and we're being taught by Christian Brothers. They were more interested in the whole discipline thing than I think they were in teaching. And then you go into college, and unfortunately, I was relegated to Northern Illinois University, which, when you get a diploma from that school, is the equivalent of about 6 months at Altissima Beauty College. I just never really had good teachers. I started getting good teachers when I got into broadcasting, and that was the only thing I was interested in. And the teachers that I had early on, I was very easily influenced, but I picked out some good people. I learned how to do things the right way, and the rest is history. All right, if you're like me, you're getting seriously freaked out about this AI situation. And yesterday, one of the main cogs, one of the guys who was instrumental in basically inventing artificial intelligence as we have now known it for the last month or so, resigned yesterday because he said the very creation that he is responsible for could lead to the end of humanity. Those are his words. I mean, there's people running around applying this AI stuff to everything, and if you're not concerned, you ought to be. It's like those old sci-fi movies from the 50s where the scientist creates the monster and then he can't control the monster, and you know how those stories end up. I think it's really scary stuff. Really scary stuff. And about the worst possible thing that could happen to me has happened. Well, two things have, but I'll get to the first one first. That's how you do things. You go to the first one first. Writer's strike in Hollywood and New York. This is really bad news for, you know, the best part of my day. Oh, you know, I was always fooling around with my daughter and stuff like that. But you know, when you push that aside, best part of my day is all the late night television talk shows. I love them all. I watch them. I didn't watch James Corden, but I watch everything else. Seth Meyers, A Closer Look, some of the best writing in television. Colbert's monologue, some of the best writing in television. Kimmel, some of the best produced pieces in television. Gosh, they are doing some really, really good stuff over at Kimmel. And I'm not a fan of Jimmy Fallon, but every once in a while they do something. So you have to watch because you don't want to miss anything. So yesterday was a pretty good example of that. I'm sitting there going, all right, his monologue's not funny. I don't know what it is with Jimmy Fallon. He just runs around the stage. It's almost like you want to get a fly swatter. And the only thing worse than that is these other shows like, what is it called? That's My Jam. And then he also does Password. So he's got all these little projects on the side, aside from The Tonight Show. And that's where he's always running around all over the place, all over the set on Password. Do you ever remember Alan Ludden or Betty White running around the set of Password back in the 60s? But that hasn't stopped Jimmy Fallon. And I think if you're doing that, it's because your material is weak. And so you have to do something to create excitement or interest. So you just go running around the stage like a nut. But the writers are on strike, and unfortunately, with a lot, Mercury's in retrograde, too. That ain't helping. I think that's over in about 2 weeks. But anyhow, the immediate impact of the writer's strike is the late-night television talk shows. Everybody will be in reruns getting on the writers. And everybody who knows anything about this is on the side of the writers. Now, you've heard me on numerous occasions talk about Chris Albers. Chris Albers, the guy who went to SLU High, went to New York, got a job at NBC, worked his way up to Paul Schaefer's personal assistant, started submitting jokes to Letterman. He ended up on Letterman's writing staff. He wrote for Bill Maher. He wrote for Jon Stewart. And then for 14 years was Conan O'Brien's monologue writer. And he's a very good friend of mine. And after Conan moved to the West Coast, Chris decided to stay in New York, and he became the president of the Writers Guild for 2 years. So there isn't anybody who knows anything more about this than my friend Chris. Well, they're like anybody else in a labor dispute like this. They're getting screwed. And when you start taking into consideration all of the changes that have occurred in electronic media and entertainment and anything that needs to be written, and that's everything from the monologues and the bits and everything that you see on Kimmel and Fallon and Colbert and everybody else like that, all the way to like the scripts for Law and Order or CSI or anything else. Now, those shows, have a bunch of material already edited, already written, already produced, already in the can, and those things will run. But when those are done running, that's it. There's no more new material. You can't do a TV show without a script. But, all this streaming stuff, all these different networks and services that have popped up, and the writers are just getting crap. And their position is, there's enough money to go around for everybody. I mean, these networks and these services are making money hand over fist because why? Because we love them. And the writers are saying all this stuff has started up since the last round of negotiations over 10 years ago. So can we just put something together that's more equitable and a little more fair so that everybody gets a little piece of the action? And they're basically being told by the big Hollywood film and television show institutions, if you will, I don't think so. And for whatever reason, everybody seems to be indicating, they said this beforehand, that if there is a strike, it's probably going to be a long one. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that here we are in the month of May, and pretty much all shows go into reruns over the course of the summer. So not until you get closer to the fall, where the networks, and that would include the streaming networks and the over-the-air networks, they all need new shows and new material. And there's a lot of people speculating that, as is the case usually with negotiations, it goes to 11:59:59 before anybody does anything about it. So unfortunately, I think I have to agree that this is going to be a long strike, and it's just going to suck for me. Like I said, this is a very important part of my day, these late night television talk shows, and I am really, really not in a happy mood about this. Now, speaking of my friend Chris, I pulled this out of the archives today. It goes back to 2008 when the last strike was going on, and the number two guy in the top 10 you're about to hear is Chris, and here's Dave.
The category tonight's top 10 list, by the way, it's the first one of 2008.
Yes, it is.
How about that? So that's going to be good. It's the category tonight, Demands of the Striking Writers. Oh. Demands of the Striking WGA Writers. And here now to present tonight's top 10 list, 10 striking writers from the WGA. Kids, come on out, if you will. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for helping us out. Thank you for all of your hard work during the labor action. Here we go, number 10. From The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, Tim Carvel, ladies and gentlemen.
Complimentary tote bag with next insulting contract offer.
Exactly, that's right. Top 10 demands of the striking writers. Number 9 from the Colbert Report, Laura Kraft. Oh.
No rollbacks in health benefits, so I can treat the hypothermia I caught on the picket line.
Mm-hmm. Good idea. Number 8, daytime television writer Melissa Sammons.
Full salary and benefits for my imaginary writing partner, Lester.
Lester worked here for a while. He was damn good. Yeah. Number 7 from Law & Order, criminal intent, Warren Light.
Members of the AMPTP must explain what the hell AMPTP stands for.
Exactly. And number 6 from the Colbert Report, Jay Katzir.
No disciplinary action taken against any writer caught having an inappropriate relationship with a copier.
Number 5 from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, Steve Bodo.
I'd like a date with a woman.
What? What? Wait a minute. What does that have to do with anything?
Just a man.
Number 4, writer and director Nora Ephron.
Wow.
Hazard pay for breaking up fights on The View.
And not a minute too soon. From Law & Order, Gina Gianfrido.
I'm no accountant, but instead of us getting 4 cents for a $20 DVD, how about we get $20 for a 4 cent DVD?
Exactly. And how about a date with a woman? Number 2 from Late Night with Conan O'Brien, Chris Albers.
I don't have a joke. I just want to remind everyone that we're on strike, so none of us are responsible for this lame list.
Wait a minute. Is that... And the number 1 demand of the striking writers, Thurber Award-winning author Alan Zweibel.
Producers must immediately remove their heads from their asses.
Yeah, that was Chris standing next to Alan Zweibel, who is legendary in comedy circles. He was one of the original writers for Saturday Night Live and collaborated with Gilda Radner back in 1975-76, right in there. He's been around forever and is a brilliant comedic writer. Now, I was mentioning that you can't blow off Jimmy Fallon, even though I don't know, the show just doesn't connect with me. I don't feel like he's talking to me for some reason. I know they're trying to go young, and maybe that's part of the problem, and I'm not young anymore, but stuff still needs to be funny. I don't care who you're talking to. But last night, as I said, perfect example of why you still have to pay attention. How great is this?
And finally, guys, I want to give a shout-out to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer John Fogerty, who just kicked off his new Celebration tour this week. We love John Fogerty. John stopped by the show earlier today, so we stepped into the Tonight Show music room with the Roots. We grabbed some classroom instruments and did our own version of the Creedence Clearwater Revival hit, Looking Out My Back Door. Check this out.
Today, how about no sorrow? Good, good.
Those are fun. Those are fun. I like those things. The one they did with Mariah Carey for All I Want for Christmas Is You, where they had the little kids in the front row who would bow down and then pop their heads back up. Oh, my God. Cutest thing I've ever seen in my life. And if you can make me like something that Mariah Carey is doing, you've really accomplished something. Oh, and just one more. This one's from Colbert.
Ron DeSantis was supposed to help the GOP move past the former president, but he has one big political liability. He's Ron DeSantis. And he's tanking in the polls, and not just here, everywhere he goes on the planet. He just returned. Ron DeSantis, he just returned from a foreign trip that was officially billed as an attempt to build Florida's economic relationships with the UK, Israel, South Korea, and Japan. Yes, he was trying to boost sales of Florida's top exports. Unemployed alligators, SpongeBob face tattoos, and drunk bachelorettes wandering around going, "Guys, where's Liz? Where's Liz? I'm supposed to go back to the hotel with Liz. Wait, I'm Liz."
Well, like I said, I hope you enjoyed that, because that's the last new bunch of stuff you're going to get for what looks to be a very, very long time. We lost Gordon Lightfoot yesterday. He was 84. He looked terrible, by the way, but he was 84. He's got the right to look like an old man, okay? He was. I'm going to look like that someday. Some people would argue I look like that then now. Sundown, If You Could Read My Mind, Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Oh, yeah, the song Beautiful. There was something compelling about the guy, and I have no idea what it was. You know, If You Could Read My Mind, every time I heard it yesterday. I don't know if you're like me, but I hear something new every time, or conjure up a new idea in my mind about what it is he's singing about. We know that Sundown was about Kathy Evelyn Smith, who was the wannabe, the hangaround, who administered the speedball that killed John Belushi. And she had a similar relationship with Gordon Lightfoot. She just didn't end up killing him. I'm also surprised that by now somebody hasn't made a movie about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. We forgot to mention this yesterday. See how I said we, like I'm blaming somebody else? Like there's more than one person. No, it's me. Aerosmith's going to kick off their Peace Out Farewell Tour on September 2nd in Philadelphia. The Black Crowes are opening. Pretty good show. St. Louis stop, I believe it's in October. Cher and her 37-year-old boyfriend have broken up. No word on why, but it might have something to do with he's 37 and she's 106. Katy Perry and Lionel Richie will be replaced by Alanis Morissette and Ed Sheeran on Sunday's episode of American Idol. Katy and Lionel will be in England performing at the King Charles III coronation concert. Oh, God, that's going to ruin TV all weekend long. Fox has canceled 9-1-1, but ABC is picking it up for a seventh season. The Met Gala went down in New York last night. This is where everybody dresses up in these extravagant, often ridiculous outfits. Jared Leto went as a furry. You had people being interviewed who were meowing because they were dressed like cats. Director James Gunn from St. Louis, another guy, we had him on the show once back in the day, has created 600 variations of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 for a customized experience in any type of theater configuration. Interesting guy. Boy, you know, when you're talking to him, you're getting the idea that he's using about 3% of his brain to talk to you, and the other 97%, he's just got stuff running through his mind about filmmaking. Someone posted the Super Mario Brothers movie on Twitter over the weekend. 9 million people watched it before somebody said, can you take that down, please? CNN, you can see what they're doing. They're trying to be perceived no longer as a one-sided news network. And in an attempt to achieve that goal, they are doing a town hall a week from Wednesday with Donald Trump. Here we go. Here we go. I don't know if the I Want My 80s tour is scheduled for St. Louis, but Rick Springfield is going to be joined on select dates by the Hooters, Paul Young, Tommy Two Tone, John Waite, and the Tubes. Oh, and by the way, the CEO of Live Nation is now trying to convince us that ridiculously expensive concert tickets are not a bad thing. People are like, okay, the tickets are already pretty high priced, but okay, but I'm going to drop $150 per ticket for, you know, whatever. So that's $300. And now you got to check out, and there's like another $60 in fees. Here's this guy's comment. Well, it depends. You could have a facility fee, which the venue would charge, and that would be their fee. Credit card fee is separate. That's a small percentage. That might be 3-4%. And Ticketmaster would split that on the same kind of percentage. Yeah, shut up. All right, birthdays today. Another St. Louis gal, Ellie Kemper from The Office, 43. David Beckham, 48. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, 51. MSNBC's Mika Brzezinski, 56. Christine Baranski, who's in everything. She's 71. Lou Graham from Foreigner, 73. Bianca Jagger, Mick's first wife, 78. People are always saying that the Billy Joel song Big Shot is based on a bad date that he had with her. And I've heard that that is absolute nonsense. It's got nothing to do with Bianca Jagger. And that's one of those stories that just, I don't know, sprouted up and won't go away, even though there's no truth to it. It was 26 years ago today, 1997, the first Austin Powers movie was released. George W. Bush stood on the flight deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln with a banner that read, "Mission accomplished," on this date back in 2003. The major combat operations that he announced were over went on for like another 10 years. Interesting how nobody called that fake news. It was on this date, 1984. I was sitting in my apartment in Buffalo, New York, and this radio station in the Midwest, in St. Louis, had already contacted me and wanted to hear more of my work, so I sent it along. Then they contacted me again and wanted to hear more. And do you have any video, by the way? Yes, I do. I'll send that too. Racking up all these postage charges. But on this date in 1984, they called and booked my trip to St. Louis, where I would come in, meet everybody, and eventually be hired for the very first time in St. Louis. On this date, 10 years later, in 1994, I took a tour of the new keel for Channel 4. I was working as the entertainment reporter for Channel 4, and, you know, there was so much curiosity about the new place the St. Louis Blues were going to be playing, and they were making great progress, and the guy called up and he said, "Look, you know, I'll take you on a tour, bring your cameras along, and we'll show you the place." And we did a really, really cool piece showing how close they were to completing the project and opening up for business. That was on this date in 1994. As I get ready to return to the morning airwaves in St. Louis in a couple of days, I started thinking about maybe putting a list together of all the things that have transpired in the last 13 and a half years since I was last heard on the FM dial in St. Louis. And, you know, one of the things that definitely makes the list is the fact that we have all these people running around insisting that the earth is flat. You think that's stupid? Get this. 1 in 9 people surveyed, and this was 20,000 people in the poll. So it's not like they just asked 20 people. 20,000. It's a pretty good cross-section of America. 1 in 9 people are insisting that cereal is soup. You know that stuff you eat, you know, Cheerios, whatever the case may be? That's soup now. Fentanyl, now the number one cause of death of Americans between the ages of 18 and 49. Think about that. We're all running around so worried about foreign terrorists and the immigration problem and all these things that are going to get us, and the politicians jump up and down and get you all excited about, you know, things that we have to do to secure the United States of America. And in the meantime, we're all killing ourselves with fentanyl. And by the way, if you're going to run around and try to steal catalytic converters from cars, might be a good idea to check to make sure nobody's sitting in the car when you do it. Happened to a guy in Rhode Island. He's sitting there eating his breakfast. The guys are underneath the car. Wow. Wow. And I love this story from 1997. Let me set it up for you. So Letterman's people decide, hey, we got this idea. Every Friday night for like the next month or two, let's just pick out a city and have the entire audience for that show be from that one particular city. So they did Indianapolis and they did New Orleans and they did a couple other places. But it was on this date in 1997 that the audience was all from St. Louis. Now, I was working at Channel 4 at the time while we were doing the morning show on, oh God, I think it might have been Clue at that time. So Letterman's people basically said, well, pick out a radio station to work with so they can distribute these tickets and everything. And of course, we were the choice. So I think we gave away something like 100 of the tickets. And I think there's 488 seats in the Ed Sullivan Theater. So we had a great time giving the tickets away. And I got to take a TV crew along with me. We filled up three planes. Three. And we shot the whole thing. It was so great because they had a party for all the people from St. Louis at a hotel. I think it was at the Hilton. And Larry Bud Melman was there. Rupert G was there. A couple of other people from the show were there. And then the police department shut down the street and paraded all 488 of us right down Broadway up to the Ed Sullivan Theater. Now, I've told this story before, and one of the things I was able to do, I said, I want to get the shot of the doors opening up and having everybody come in to the actual theater. There's a lobby out there, but I want to be in the theater. So they're, hey, sure. So I had the cameraman set up, you know, pointing towards the back of the theater, and then I stood there, and we were waiting for the doors to open up so we could get the shot. Now, I'm in there all by myself, just me and the cameraman. It's just the two of us, and I'm standing there leaning against the stage, and it dawns on me, holy crap, this is the stage the Beatles performed on in 1964. This is the stage where I saw George Carlin for the first time. Even fucking Topo Gigio, all that stuff. And I just reached out and just sort of put my hand on the stage to sort of, you know, I don't know, soak in the moment. Then I heard this ruckus outside, and sure enough, here comes the crowd, and those doors flew open, and those people came charging in. We got this great shot of the whole thing, and now I'm working the crowd because I need certain shots, so I have the entire theater yell out, hi, Mom, and stuff like that. And they are just so geeked. They are so geeked. And the little backstory on this is that right till the very end of David Letterman's run on television, they used to refer to the St. Louis audience. They say, how's the crowd tonight? And comedian Eddie Brill, who used to do the warm-up act for Letterman, told me that they would frequently say, well, it's no St. Louis, but it's a good crowd. Honest to God. Honest to God. That's how wired those people were in that theater that night. And one other little note here. The audio that you're about to hear from Dave's monologue, which is all customized for St. Louis, is not the best. And the reason why is, obviously, I'm in New York, but I had my VCR set. That's right. Still VCRs back then. And there was a storm going through. And you'll even hear the little toot, 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 because they were running a crawl on the bottom of the screen telling you to watch out because there's severe thunderstorms. So there's all this noise and everything. I think what happened was that the power might have gone out at one point, and when it came back on, somehow it affected the tracking on the VCR, and so it's just all crappy sound. But you'll enjoy it nonetheless. Let's go back to 1997.
From New York, where everyone in the audience is from St. Louis, it's The Late Show with
have a seat. Thank you. Very nice of you, ladies and gentlemen, but please, you know, we have to hurry this along. I've got tickets for the Sally Jesse Raphael show. You know what's funny about this? I didn't think you'd really come. I had no idea. I gotta tell you something, folks. Tonight, in honor of the great people and the great city of St. Louis, tonight. Tonight, I am wearing my Budweiser twist-off toupee. I guess you know what we're doing by now. A week ago tonight, everybody in the audience was from my hometown of Indianapolis. Tonight, everybody in the theater is from the great city, the gateway city of St. Louis, Missouri. And yeah, sure. Listen to this. Next week, we're hoping to fill the theater with those Texas militia guys. So
that goes. That's a nice.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, good news tonight. Nobody goes home empty-handed. No, sir. Everybody in the audience tonight gets a year's supply of Purina Audience Chow. It's damn good. I tell you, it's damn good. By the way, I heard some bad news. If St. Louis Rams running back Lawrence Phillips, if he gets arrested one more time, he automatically becomes property of the Dallas Cowboys. That's it. You know, I think the people of New York City were a little disappointed when the Rams moved to St. Louis, you know. We were, you know, kind of hoping you'd take the Jets. Well, you know how we feel. Can I be honest with you folks? You know, I love doing this show, and I've been doing it for, oh my God, it seems like 16, 17 years every night. It's a big job entertaining America night after night after night. And I love it, but the only reason I'm really doing it, when I finally get enough money, this is serious, I'm gonna open my own theater in Branson. It's great that you folks were able to come from Missouri. And by the way, Missouri is unbelievably beautiful, isn't it? Isn't it a lovely state? Unbelievably beautiful. I was thinking about this afternoon. You folks have come from Missouri, the show me state, of course. Now you're here in New York, the bite me state. We have a lovely show for you folks tonight. We're going to make it worth your time and your trouble. Roseanne is on the program. We have a 7-year-old chef, Justin Miller, and Mr. Rock and Roll. Am I right, Paul?
Yeah!
Chuck Berry.
From St. Louis!
In honor of this broadcasting milestone, not only for us here at The Late Show, but you fine folks in St. Louis, we've prepared a small little tribute for you. I hope you enjoy it. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ozzie Smith. Ozzie!
Thank you.
288. Very happy St. Louis residents are on a whirlwind trip to the Big Apple.
J.C. Corcoran is among the group, and he says the whole thing is more fun than humans should be allowed to have.
Tickets to Dave's show.
8:30 yesterday morning, and the nearly 500 fans of David Letterman, lucky enough to have won trips, converge on Lambert Field's East Terminal. Three separate chartered jets take off for New York for the special All St. Louis night at the Late Show. About the time we settle in to enjoy the view, a Letterman staffer begins collecting driver's licenses, not for any official purpose. It's a request from Dave's staff of comedy writers. From planes to buses, and then our Manhattan Hotel, at a special reception, some winners still can't believe they were lucky enough to have had their postcards chosen in the contest.
I sent 20 from four different post offices. Lehman.
Popular Letterman regular and deli operator Rupert G. poses for pictures, and even Calvert DeForest, a.k.a. Larry Bud Melman, fixes a plate.
You can eat all that yourself?
Of course, I'm a growing boy.
Some St. Louis Cardinal fans take advantage of the trip to greet New Yorkers, while not one, but two double-jointed women have dreams of stupid human tricks dancing in their heads. Everywhere you look, the St. Louis Letterman fans are showered with hospitality.
And the hospitality went one big step further as the NYPD shut down 52nd Street for a police escort, Big Apple style.
Around the corner and onto Broadway, it's the famous Ed Sullivan Theater, and now the crowd knows the big show is only moments away. Coming up tonight at 10, a preview of what you'll see on tonight's show, and we'll talk with the St. Louisans who were lucky enough to have a brush with greatness. In New York, J.C. Corcoran, News 4 St. Louis.
When you look at those old shows compared to now, you are in very, very much command of the whole interviewing situation.
I still stink. Just between you and me, I still stink.
No.
It's not an interview show. The purpose of the show is we get somebody on there, we loosen them up with a couple, oh, I enjoyed the film, or it's so nice to see you, and then bang, 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 we go to work on them. That's no interview.
When your name's on the front of the theater, it means you pretty much get to have things your way. That was not always the case with David Letterman. It was 1980, and Mary Tyler Moore was attempting a comeback to television with a Sunday night variety series, and David Letterman was signed as a regular. But variety meant singing and dancing, and Letterman can't do either one.
Not only were we dancing, we had costumes. We had ridiculous costumes, and we'd be singing. You know, and Mary Tyler Moore, you know, can dance in her sleep. She has to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the line. She's dancing. You know, 4:30 in the morning, she's, you know, foxtrot into the John. And it was just horrifying. It was humiliating. It was degrading.
Letterman quickly left that show, though the experience wasn't a total loss.
Part of the deal was, settling up my contract, I got to keep my wardrobe. And for a guy who had no clothing, this was like, fine. This was work worth a summer of humiliation to get suits that fit.
Of course, all's well that ends well, except for the fact that the battle for the late-night television audience Johnny vacated 3 years ago apparently will never end. J.C. Corcoran, News 4.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.